Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is headed to Asia after his trip in Alberta. First up, an official visit to South Korea, then on to Japan for the G7 summit. Trudeau's first stop in Seoul is from May the 16th until the 18th, and it's all to talk strategy for the Indo-Pacific region. Then he'll be joining the G7 leaders summit at the end of the week in Hiroshima, Japan. Orel Brown is a political scientist at the University of Toronto joining us now. Hello there.
Hello.
What can you tell us about this meeting in South Korea? What do you think will be discussed there?
South Korea is a crucial player in the region. It is also a very large trading partner of Canada. We have had a free trade agreement with South Korea since the Harper administration. We have about $17 billion worth of trade, and these are important elements. And we would like to have a kind of combination of addressing things such as environmental issues, political concerns, and strategic threats. And there's a way of melding all this together because South Korea builds a lot of batteries. It has the capacity to invest in Canada in an electric battery plant, the production of electric cars here. And also because it is a large producer of armaments, we and other countries in the West are trying to persuade South Korea to sell some of those armaments, like tanks, artillery pieces, and especially 155-millimeter artillery shells to Ukraine. They have refused to do that so far because they are very concerned about provoking Russia, with which they would like to have good relations, and they are very sensitive to possible retaliation by Vladimir Putin.
And then, of course, China, I imagine China's power and influence might also be part of the discussions. What are you expecting in that regard?
I would expect that that would be a large part because China has been very assertive, even aggressive in the region. And of course, the relationship that South Korea has with China is a vital one because they view China as a country that has the ability to restrain North Korea. North Korea is led by a leader who's viewed widely as unstable, but he also happens to have nuclear weapons. So here's South Korea that has risen from extreme poverty to become one of the wealthiest and most successful democracies in the world, a spectacularly effective exporter of manufactured goods, but all that could disappear in a nuclear attack by North Korea. And so China can play that role in trying to restrain or at the very least moderate the behavior of Kim Jong-un.
Orel, there is a symbolic importance to where the G7 Leaders Summit is happening, right? What is it about that location do you think that that's important, particularly in these discussions?
Well, you're absolutely right, because Hiroshima and Nagasaki were the two cities where nuclear weapons were actually used towards the end of the Second World War. The devastation was absolutely horrific. And it was the hope that humanity would learn from that, that we would be so horrified and terrified that we would either give up nuclear weapons or at least we would limit proliferation. The sad reality is that the world has not learned. And not only has North Korea become a nuclear state, but Iran, which is led by fanatical theocracy, is also rushing to become a nuclear state as well. And we can imagine the kind of threat that they would pose. But Russia has used nuclear blackmail, or at least attempted to use that, by making sometimes not too subtle threats, but possibly using nuclear weapons in the case of its aggression versus Ukraine. So there has to be a message sent here of unity by the Western democratic countries. These are the states that collectively have the largest economic footprint by far in the world, an enormous amount of potential to help other countries, but also to extract a price from those that behave aggressively. The message that they want to convey is of being united in supporting Ukraine to disabuse Vladimir Putin of the notion that time is on his side.
Oral, diplomacy can be a delicate dance. I wonder, when you think about and look at where the G7 Leaders Summit is happening, and you sort of look forward, how in your face do you think the leaders will be when it comes to that idea of learning from our past? Do you think it will stay symbolic, or do you think there will be stronger words and stronger positions?
There's an opportunity both to show and to actually have unity. And we saw what happens when there is a lack of unity, when someone like Emmanuel Macron, this extraordinarily ambitious and sometimes unpredictable leader of France, went to China and basically tried to differ policy pursued by France from the rest of the Western alliance. He had to retract that, and there was a tremendous amount of disappointment, at the very least anger even, in NATO. So we have to do better, including Macron, to show that there's no daylight when it comes to concerns about the environment, when it comes to pursuing support for Ukraine and making certain that Russia is defeated in Ukraine and is deterred from future aggression. And that is not something that can be done through rhetoric alone, but it has to be done through actual programs. And we can see that in the case of Germany, which has been slow to change, but now is changing in a dramatic way. At the beginning of the conflict in Ukraine, they would not sell anything but helmets to Ukraine. Now they have come up with a new package of really important, sophisticated armaments amounting about $3 billion to help Ukraine. France will need to do that. Italy will have to do that. And Canada will also have to step up. We cannot just do it by promises, by warm rhetoric. We have to enhance our hard power. And this is not only in order to help Ukrainians, it is also to help protect us. If we are going to protect our sovereignty, we have to recognize that there are threats in the Arctic, and we cannot meet that through just some collaborative programs that we may have in cultural areas, which are all fine. We need to have the ability to deploy hard power, which unfortunately is expensive, and it takes away from other very worthy causes. But this is the world we live in, one where conflict is endemic, where threats have not disappeared, and where countries don't always learn the lessons of history.
Orel Braun, political scientist at the University of Toronto, always good to have you on the program. Thank you and take good care.
Thank you for having me on.